Hi, I'm Femi Oke. Thanks for watching the stream. 193 countries have agreed to end plastic pollution. That's the entire membership of the United Nations. Now they have to work on a legally binding document. On today's episode of The Stream, we are talking about how to tackle plastic pollution and what is at stake globally. Your thoughts, your comments, put right here on YouTube.
I really hope that the states will agree on measures to standardize the design of plastic so they're safe to use and recycle.
I would really like to see countries take a human and environmental health approach to addressing the full life cycle of plastics through mandatory measures.
What we need are a range of measures that cap virgin plastics production, that reshape patterns of consumption, and that protect valuable and vulnerable communities such as waste pickers, those in small island developing states that are on the front line of plastics pollution and that also work to help remediate its worst impacts.
On May the 29th, the United Nations Environment Programme will be hosting round two of these negotiations to talk about the Global Plastics Treaty. Who's going to be at the table? What are the big issues? Well, joining us to talk about this in Paris, we have Andres de Castillo, a senior attorney with the Center for International Environmental Law. In California, in the US, Shilpi Chotre, executive director of People Over Plastic. And in Blantyre, Malawi, Tuwonge Muzumaragawa, a partner and campaigner with the development NGO Tier Fund. It is really good to have you. I think, first of all, what is going to be the most controversial aspect of round two of these negotiations? Andres, you're there in Paris. What are you not looking forward to having to debate and discuss?
Thank you so much, Femi, for the invitation. This is a really timely conversation, and I'm really glad to share the podium with the other panelists. Uh-huh. First of all, you can already feel here in Paris the ambiance of what is going on with the Plastic Treaty second round negotiations. Why? Because first, you have, since the whole week, we have many, many events, you know, with diplomats, negotiators, NGOs. Everybody's coming together to try to set the scene and the tone of what will be a really difficult negotiation. First, what I don't want to see is NGOs outside of the UN venue, of the UN building. Mm-hmm. I want everybody that was registered to be inside of the building. This is kind of the first thing that I want to see, and I want to see discussions on the substance and less discussions in the procedural matters.
Who's at the table, Tuwonge? Are the right people at the table?
Not all the right people. As Andreas alluded there, obviously there's been this cut for civil society who can enter the venue. I think it is important that everybody is represented, and civil society usually brings in all the different voices because they're working with different communities. And this treaty is about justice. It's about ensuring everybody, doesn't matter which income level you are, should have the right regulations that protect our health and our ecosystems from plastic pollution. So all voices should have that opportunity to be in that room, but at the moment, maybe that may not be the case.
All right. Tuwonge, would you do something for me? Your microphone is just rubbing on your beautiful blouse. Just hold it away from your blouse, and then we can enjoy the rest of your conversation. Shilpi, this idea of developing countries, NGOs, not making it into the negotiations, that's really, really serious. Can you tell us why they need to be there? Because when we talk about plastic pollution, the rich countries send their plastics to the developing world. So who should be at the table in greater numbers? Surely the developing world.
That's absolutely correct. And I'm honestly appalled that this is the current situation. And I don't want to speak for our colleagues in the Global South since I live in the United States, but I'll give my reflections based on working on this issue at the global level. As we know, we've researched this time and time again, plastic pollutes at every stage of its life cycle, from extraction to production and disposal. And especially on that disposal end, we know how burdened communities in the Global South are compared to wealthier nations, as you stated. And this is because of a few key reasons, which I want to enumerate. First, the companies headquartered in the global north are pumping out products of largely low-value single-use plastic to countries in the global south who have very different waste management infrastructure than wealthier nations. They simply weren't designed to absorb this amount of waste. And to that point, no country is. As we see this playing out in wealthier nations, we're outsourcing our plastics problem in the form of waste colonization, which means shipping and dumping waste to less resourced countries to deal with. So imagine these nations that are already overburdened with so much plastic, and now they're getting dumped by other countries, which is really a moral and ethical question at the end of the day. So I'm absolutely disappointed by this decision. And, it's also this story about the inequities that continue to exist when we talk about plastic and climate impacts.
I'm wondering, Andres, can this be fixed quite quickly? The second round of negotiations hasn't even started yet. Is it too late to bring more people who are impacted by plastic pollution into these second negotiations? Or are we talking about, well, they're going to be included the next time?
Yeah, it's not too late, actually, because you will have already more than 2,700 people in Paris that are registered, but only a few of them will be able to enter even the venue, even the corridors. I'm not talking even the room itself, because the plenary room has some capacity, of course, like for around 1,300 people, right? But we are going to see some discussions that we are going to split during the whole week in small rooms that can't bear more than 300 people around. So we already are seeing layers, like an onion of complexity, how to make sure that we guarantee the voices of the most affected by plastic pollution from the upstream part, meaning extraction of fossil fuels, the production by petrochemicals of toxic plastics, and the waste and disposal and the enter into the environment. So how we're going to guarantee that? There are different recipes for that. The first is we want to enter into the room, or we need also to be able to see where the negotiations are happening and to intervene. We have the technology right now for that, right? This is what we're using right now.
Yeah.
So this is an example of something that we can do now, but it's the chronicle of failure foretold, because they knew that was something that they knew, that over and over there is an exponential growth, not only on plastic production, but on people interested in negotiations.
Yeah.
So you know that if you're going to have 1,500 for the first round, you're going to kind of have 2,000.
Andres, this is a logistics failure. I want to move back to Tewange, because how you go through with the negotiations, it's problematic if you're not including all of the voices, particularly the ones that are most impacted. But the reason this is important is because plastic pollution impacts our health. Can you give our audience some examples so they don't think it's just an argument about civil society need to be there and developing world needs to be there? It's because plastic pollution kills us.
Exactly. I'll tell you about me. Mm. I live in Blantyre, in the city where the city should be collecting my waste. I should have the option to separate my waste and know that my plastic is well disposed of, but I don't. I have to pay a private company to come and collect my waste, and it is not separated waste. Across the valley from where I'm living is a community that doesn't even have the option of a private collection coming through. And so what do? Their option is to either burn the plastic, which is a health hazard, or they dump it in a drain or a nearby river that is close by, which piles up, increases the risk of flooding. As Blantyre, we just had the cyclone Freddy, and we saw what flooding does. This was at a time when we had cholera also.
Oof.
And these plastics are sort of a high risk of hosting this bacteria that cause cholera. And you can imagine in that sort of status, and in Malawi at the moment, 80% of the plastic produced is single-use plastic. And we don't have a process for managing our waste, or even those people that would want to don't have an option to safely dispose. And they don't have, they dump them, they burn them, because this is what is accessible to them at the moment. This shouldn't be like that. And this is why I'm saying it is important that everybody's voices is heard, and that those that treaty, that the UN plus the this plastic treaty addresses these issues, makes it possible that everybody has can, if there's, for example, we're talking about, yes, there's an issue of production that needs to be reduced. But for, also for that plastic that does come, then there's appropriate measures, and everybody has access to those measures to properly dispose and to properly, and also whether there's recycling. And when we talk about recycling, we obviously bring in the people. Like I'm saying, it's somebody who is coming, their waste pickers coming to my house and offering this service. We can't ignore those people. And they buy, they take the plastic, they're probably selling to those that do want to recycle. So they are providing a service. And all these voices need to be heard. That treaty need to address all these issues that are there when we talk about plastic pollution.
Shilpi, what's on your mind?
I completely agree with what Tawange is saying. It's heartbreaking that there's so much at stake here. And I thought it would be a good opportunity to actually talk about the production piece. So both Andreas and Tawange have alluded to the production piece quite a bit, and it is essential. 99% of plastic does come from an oil and gas-based resource. So we can't ignore the stark relationship between plastic and fossil fuels. We talk about communities that are most impacted on the production piece. We have a place called Cancer Alley in the United States in the Gulf South. It's an 85-mile stretch of land between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's a predominantly Black part of the country, and it's literally called Cancer Alley. It is killing people, Femme, to your point. So we have to make sure we're constantly holding industry giants accountable, both on the petrochemical sides, we're talking the Exxons, the Dows, and the DuPonts, and make sure their plans of plastic production doubling by 2050 doesn't actually go through. And the Global Plastics Treaty is a great way to make sure plastic production is actually prioritized, and human health across this life cycle.
Tawange, you mentioned waste pickers, which are often overlooked when we talk about recycling and using waste in a very positive way. I just want to show our audience how much waste pickers are involved in plastic pollution. 60% of plastic recycled is collected by informal waste pickers. Tawange, when you live, what does that look like?
Yes, so like I've mentioned, we've got those that are providing a service. So I told you how we didn't have an option. For me, you have, you know, individuals that come, knock at your gate and offer that service. Say, can I take your package? You pay them a small something, and they take it away. They sort out, obviously, the plastic that they can sell to a recycling company. They'll take and sell. Then we also have the company that we're using now. So they are taking plastic, taking them to a dump that is, that is set up, and you have the waste pickers also there, because even in Malawi we do have the initiative, small medium enterprises that starting up enterprises to recycle waste. But because we don't separate at source, everything is put together, then it is at these dump sites where these people are working and sorting out and taking out all the plastic that the small and medium enterprises want, so that they also put their effort in recycling that plastic waste.
Thank you, Tawange. What I like, guess, about where we are at this stage is that people are talking about what is needed to be done, who needs to be in the conversation. But also the United Nations Environment Programme also released a report saying this is what we can do practically. Not, it's a problem, we don't know what to do. This is what we can do. We have broken it down as a very straightforward graphic. Andres, I am volunteering you to help me. Just a thought as we go through this. So UNEP is saying by 2040, it is possible to reduce plastic pollution by 80% just by using existing technology and making some policy changes. So let's look at some of those policy changes. Reduction. Just eliminate the problematic and unnecessary plastics in a sentence. Andres, is that possible?
Yeah,
can that be done?
This is possible, but we need to understand that plastics are plastic materials and plastics are plastics products too. So the reduction part needs to be one of the main part of the equation there.
All right. Another idea from UNEP is reusing. Promote the reusable containers and take-back schemes. When I was a kid, many decades ago, you used to be able to buy bottles of pop or soda, and then you would give them back and you would get 5p back. And milk came in bottles, and then you put the bottles on your doorstep, and then they put milk in those bottles again. And then there was no plastic, there was no cardboard containers. That's how you did it. So the idea of recycling, Andres, can we go back to that?
Yeah, recycling is, you know, it's coming over and over and over, and it depends the technique that you use. And I will be kind of critical with the UNEP report, having been invited by them 8 days before to review the actual report. When you look at the headlines, of course, that give you hope of we can reduce pollution by 80%. But at the end, when you look with a magnified glass, you see that what they mean by plastic pollution is not a total reduction of the scale of plastic pollution, but only the mismanagement of plastic waste entering into the environment.
Shilpi is dying to say something. Shilpi is like, I have to say this. Go ahead.
I'm just relieved that Andres is like, this is not the full story, right? Because the headlines love to do that. Let me be clear. UNEP is asking governments to invest $54 billion to clean up the plastic, oil, and chemical sectors instead of turning off the tap on plastic and oil production. This is a massive disconnect, right? It also begs the question around corporate responsibility and their financial responsibility. In simple terms, plastic is a combination of carbon and chemicals, and we know it's toxic to human health. So I was really hoping it would be a lot more hard-hitting on the corporate accountability piece and also framing human health as...
Right. Shilpi, I want you to take the last pieces. I'm doing them in big headlines, but it helps us just understand the extent of this UNEP report. Replace plastic wrappers with alternative materials. So just, if it's unnecessary, let's just think of different ways of packaging our products, Shilpi.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what Andres was saying about scaling up economies of refill and reuse. The problem is we have become so hyper-focused on the convenient solution that it's getting cities to really think about zero waste infrastructure rather than on just the individual and consumer level. So, of course, we want to focus on higher value material that have true recyclability like aluminum and glass, but that photo you just share of like a chip bag, that's when it becomes a little bit more difficult to activate that sort of systems change approach.
So, Wonge, do you have some ideas with how we can actually get rid of plastic pollution from your part of the world where you're saying, actually, this is what we're doing and this is what is possible?
Yeah. So I think what we're also talking about, I think Shilpi touched on it a little bit there, is that because of what people are used to, I also here in Malawi before, we had the glass bottles that we changed even for our software of soft drinks and things. Mm-hmm. But now the plastics came in and they're sort of more convenient to use, and people are taking those as their options. So for me, I feel for my side of the country, we need to look at, yes, the alternatives that are there, but we also, there's a lot to do with people and their perceptions, and also wanting them to understand and to appreciate and to create the linkages, because I think important linkages, when people understand. So, for example, I was talking about the links with, say, flooding. In our city, Blantyre, people are asking, you know, how are we having so much flood? This wasn't being connected. So when people sort of connect the real impacts of what these plastics do, maybe we can also have that change, because that is also important. So people choose not to use and actually want to have those alternatives and demand those alternatives, so that they're made available, or that they are promoted in a way, and the government also feel, and they don't just look for the most convenient thing
that is there. I think also is going to move us forward.
Yes, we're getting some interesting suggestions from our audience who are watching right now on YouTube. For instance, we need better waste management that involves plastic-eating worms to help compost plastic. So that was one idea from YouTube. But I also want to give you an idea that came from, what shall I call it, Big Oil. This is from Exxon. And I've been really intrigued to see what you think about this. Let's have a look.
At ExxonMobil's facilities in Baytown near Houston, Texas, we're turning plastic waste into new materials. With our Extend technology for advanced recycling, we're breaking down even the difficult-to-recycle plastics, transforming them into the raw materials that can be used to make many new products we rely on every day. Through advanced recycling, we can provide customers with certified circular plastics.
I am not convinced, and not just I'm not convinced, but there are researchers who do not believe it is possible to have a circular economy with plastics. Shilpi, when you see that from Exxon, have they found a way to have circular plastics, or is that sigh telling me something else?
This is greenwashing. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
This is greenwashing in its purest form. The term advanced recycling is neither advanced or recycling. It's of course being touted by oil giants like Exxon, which should already raise some flags. This particular facility is saying it's capable of breaking down 36,000 metric tons of hard-to-recycle plastic each year. But there are studies that have actually been conducted by chemical engineers that indicate these plants do little actual recycling, emit greenhouse gas emissions, hazardous pollutants like benzene, and it's all while providing cover to keep producing millions of tons of new plastic products each year.
Let me just bring in Andres, because when I mentioned advanced recycling, Andres did this with his finger, which I'm thinking like, I don't think so. But Andres, go ahead, articulate your thought.
Exactly. Thank you. The UN Chemical Convention on Basel, Rotterdam and Stockholm discussed for 4 years the technical guidance on environmental management of plastic waste and conclude 2 weeks ago, 1 week before UNEP released that report also that kind of promote chemical recycling, that actually chemical recycling can't not be considered an environmental management practice and is not possible to consider that this is the way to go for countries. Sure. So if the whole number of countries decided that, why we're going to put that forward and discuss that in a plastic treaty after 4 years of negotiations.
Okay, guess I have one more important question, and that comes from Greenpeace in the USA. And I'm going to pose the question, or Graham will pose the question, and your answer is less than 30 seconds. Let's have a listen.
The Global Plastics Treaty represents one of the most important and consequential opportunities for the world to move away from fossil fuels that we've had in decades. The key element is, will world leaders have the courage to step up to the fossil fuel industry and agree global limits on plastic production and massive reductions to production over time?
Tuwonge.
I think that's that's something we're grappling with even here in Malawi, where we have thin plastic regulations that are now challenged in court. And our government, there hasn't been any move on even getting those, because these companies have, are fighting it.
All right, Shilpi. I'm sharing these last thoughts with all of the guests. Tuwonge, Shilpi, go ahead.
Yeah, great message from Graham. I would just add, polluters should be kept out of the treaty process. We need a treaty that limits this type of influence.
And Andres, he's right there in Paris, waiting for negotiations to start. Andres.
Yeah, exactly. We need to make sure that we give room for the voices that need not only the microphone, but also the pen to write our future.
Thank you for your voices, Andres, Shilpi, Tuwonge, and for everybody who joined in on YouTube. Appreciate you. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.